Hello, once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Friday, February 8th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next 20 to 25 minutes or so, as we talk about UFC 234 with Christian Pina. Great preview at bangthebook.com. You definitely want to check out. You can follow him on Twitter at Christian Pina, P-I-N-A. That'll be the only segment here for this Friday show. I know I said I wasn't going to do a Friday show, but I didn't want to leave everybody hanging. So we're just going to chat a little bit here about this UFC 234 event. So that preview up over at bangthebook.com to go along with all of our daily NBA college basketball stuff, daily NHL picks, a lot of good things going on over at the website right now. We cover soccer, we cover tennis, we cover golf. NASCAR makes its return next week, I believe, with the Daytona 500. So you know, plenty of stuff going on, even though football is done for the year. Keep it tuned to bangthebook.com. We are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. As you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the Sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino. FBetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. One guest, one segment here as we wrap up this week on Bang the Book Radio. That is Christian Pina from Gambling Podcast. Christian, how's it going today, man?
Good, man. It's raining out here in the desert once again, but it's kind of a nice little refresh after the Super Bowl weekend and everything that was kind of going on in Vegas. So a little bit of, you know, starting off gambling winter here a little bit until March Madness. But luckily, UFC has gone pretty much all out here. So we have basically an event for, I believe it's like 8 out of the next 9 weeks. So tons of great fight opportunities and all the free cards upcoming. This one, of course, being on pay-per-view. So it's a great time to be a fan of mixed martial arts.
Well, before we jump into UFC 234, how did the Super Bowl go for you, man?
Good, man. I mean, as a hometown Boston kid, I grew up in Boston first 25 years of life. So lifelong Patriots, Sox, Celtics type of guy, as it is kind of ingrained into the blood of everyone that's from Boston. But I've always been a prop player when it comes to the NFL mainly. And so the Super Bowl is obviously, you know, my heaven with everything that's available to bet on in the prop market. So Super Bowl was very good, man. One of the bigger bets of the evening, you know, second half higher scoring than the first. So a lot of good things that came out of the Super Bowl. And of course, you know, Brady and Belichick's six rings. So couldn't have been happier from a betting perspective and a fan perspective.
Yeah, man. You know, I feel bad for you. You had to go 3 months without a title. It's what a shame.
You know, I feel like Boston, you know, fans are getting a little bit of some deflected hate here. I read something the other day that was like a 4-month-old has more championships than a 45-year-old Mets and Jets fan or something like that. So it's getting crazy, man. I mean, the Boston parlay, I don't know if you saw this, well, basically the big four. So Celtics, Bruins, Pats and Sox, two out of the four in, it pays. I believe it's like 100 was like 100,000. So we're two out of the four. If anyone's out there has got the Boston Grand Slam, as they call it.
Yeah, I mean, my Indians are going on 71 years without a title. So, you know, I mean, I wish I could experience what you have. And, hey, you know what? I guess I'm envious. I think that's about all I can say here about everything that's gone on for Boston. But let's go ahead and get into this UFC 234 card. And, you know, as you and I were talking before we started recording here, not really a great card. So we want to talk about some of the nuts and bolts, some of the mechanics of UFC betting. You know, we talked on our last segment about, you know, sort of, how you handicap the circuits that these fighters were previously on. You know, we talked about sort of looking for some different opportunities inside the distance, knockout or submission, you know, things going the distance, stuff like that. I know one thing that I wanted to talk about here today with some bigger favorites here on this card, money line parlays. You know, some people probably don't want to lay minus 400, minus 500, but want a piece of a heavy favorite. Do you do a lot of money line parlay stuff?
Yeah, I'm a little, you know, my thought process on this is a little bit different than most professionals. I think there's maybe a little bit rightful of a connotation that professionals don't, you know, they don't utilize teasers, they don't do parlays. That's not necessarily the case. I mean, the thing is, you know, I always go back to the Floyd Mayweather Conor McGregor situation. You know, the minus 500 equates to basically a 20% ROI. And so if I told you that there was, you know, and again, the effective likelihood of that fight, despite the public narrative out there, is, you know, what I would consider upwards above, you know, 90% chance of that coming in on the Floyd Mayweather side. And so when you're talking about, you know, a 20% ROI for, you know, in this case, a UFC, the event that's, or a fight that's either 15 minutes to 25 minutes, and, you know, you have a minus 500, it's a, you know, I'm going to say virtual certainty, but it's more times than not going to come in for your 20% ROI. And so obviously professionals in groups and syndicates with bigger bankrolls are, you know, they will. There's also another connotation that people, you know, underdogs, people only bet underdogs that are in professionals. And that's just not the case as well. And so it's a little bit of both. I, you know, my max when it comes to parlays is usually a two fighter max. It's just there's so much variance in this sport, maybe more than any other sport in the world. And so it's just once you get into the 3-4, you know, it's not a good long term proposition. So I am perfectly fine with doing money line parlays. I kind of cap myself out at the, you know, either an open parlay, I think, is vastly, vastly underutilized in the professional world, again, because of whatever stigma that parlays are bad and they're bookie's best friend and this and that. And that's generally the case when you're trying to string together these 3, 4, 5 underdogs or whatever. And you got to remember, the general public, when they look at a UFC card, is going to want to do one of two things. They're going to want to bet the underdogs because they have to, you know, wager a little to win a lot, or they want to parlay every big favorite to try to get that, you know, payout back to, you know, even money, a -110, even a might, you know, whatever the case may be. So you get to kind of, you know, walk that line. And traditionally, if you look at past UFC fights, there's always one big favorite that's the, you know, the parlay buster, and that doesn't come in and kind of ruins everyone's day. And so you just have to kind of be cognizant of that and look at, you know, this is kind of where trends come in and everything like that. And again, not to say anything is fixed this or that. It's just the data shows traditionally that one big favorite at least is not going to come in. You'll be at over -300 to -400. So I use them a little bit more than most, and I use them specifically in the open money line parlay department, especially if you have books. You know, I know offshore does it. You can't do it out here in Vegas, but any locals or offshore type of situations, those will always be offered as well.
Now, let's expand a little bit on the open parlays concept, because I do think it's a little bit of an advanced concept here. And I also think it is something that does make a lot of sense, because as you said, you know, there's going to be that one big favorite that kind of screws everything up for you. So you can just kind of go along with the card, right? I mean, that's kind of how these things work.
Yeah, so for anyone that doesn't know, an open parlay is the same thing as a regular parlay, except you can fill it whenever you want. Normally, if you're doing it on, say, an NFL Sunday, an MLB slate, you have to effectively finish it on that day, anything that's being, you know, bet on that day. And the same thing with UFC, an open parlay. So instead of having to do two fighters on the same card, you bet one and you leave. You can, you know, I've seen upwards of some books offer, you know, up to 10 open spots, and you can come back and fill it in at a later day and you'll get your multiplier. Obviously, if you do your, you know, a two fight open, or, you know, you put in one fighter, you leave one open slot, you're going to get your multiplier, which is the best part, the 2.5 to 1, the, you know, 6.5 to 1 for 3 and onwards and upwards. Obviously, if you're doing that with favorites, that's one great way. If there's, you know, if there's one favorite on this card, you know, that you think that is a very good bet, it's just there's nothing else that you like to pair it with, an open parlay is a great way to utilize that. And again, you can be done in any sport, whether it be baseball, football, just about every offshore book offers them these days. So I think they're vastly underused by the general public. And I think that when you have, it's really an advantage to be able to, you know, you have to be patient. That's one thing, especially in the age of, you know, kind of people still doing locals and stuff. They want to, you know, if their payouts schedule is on, you know, a Friday or to a Monday, they want to get that in there. If they're up or they're down and offshore, obviously your, you know, your deposit is being held on that bet until it's closed. So you have to really exercise patience until you find something that you love equally as much, but definitely not being used nearly enough, I would say.
Now, you and I talked a little bit about this fight card, and as I mentioned there in the intro, not one of the stronger UFC events, and hopefully this is one of the lesser tier events for the calendar year. When it comes to betting opportunities, Christian, do you prefer the real high profile types of cards that a lot of people are going to be in the market for? Or do you like cards like this where there's not a whole lot of talk about them and maybe some underrated and underappreciated fighters?
I mean, the thing is every card is going to have these underrated matchups, you know, probably buried on the prelims. But, you know, knowing myself, and that's really where I've been able to kind of do the most work. And like we talked about last week, you know, the regional scene tape, that's the type of stuff that the general public isn't going to do. They're going to concentrate on the main event, the co-main event, the actual fight card on pay-per-view, whereas I tend to find more value in the prelims fight of these obscure fighters that people just don't know. You know, I long had a something of a no betting on the main event type of situation that I kind of gave myself, and I realized that it didn't make the most sense, just because if there is a value, you know, I think you have to exploit it. It's just the market is so efficient when you get up towards that, you know, speaking of a fight, you know, a situation like this, you know, every odds maker in the world is going to have a good line set on Robert Whittaker versus Calvin Gastelum. But when you look at on down through, you know, are they going to put the same amount of effort into lining that fight as they do a, you know, Teruto Ishihara versus K.O. Kang type of situation? You know, it's the same thing of, you know, in college basketball, would you rather bet Duke and Kentucky, or would you rather, or Duke in North Carolina, or, you know, a Kansas State and Stony Brook, or whatever the case may be. So it's just a different type of, you know, I think that odds makers largely, I don't say discount, but because the market is kept so low at entry points and limits and stuff like that for the lesser known fighters, if you really do your homework, you're going to, you know, more than not have a difference of opinion from an odds maker on a line a lot of the time. So I prefer the lesser known fights, obviously from a betting perspective, but from an entertainment perspective, of course, I prefer the marquee events of the UFC, of course.
Now, one thing that was a challenge for UFC last year, there were a lot of fighters getting swapped, whether they were backing out because of injury or, you know, getting, you know, chairs and things thrown at the bus that they were on. You know, it was just one of those years for UFC where it felt like none of the cards came together the way that they were supposed to. Looking at this fight card here, only a couple of fighter changes, both of them announced a couple of weeks ago. What do you do in those situations where, you know, guys preparing for one fighter, then all of a sudden get somebody else? I mean, do you feel like you can find some good betting opportunities there, or do these fighters in their camps have enough time to pivot usually?
It's like what we talked about in the, and I believe I wrote this up in the first preview that I did. It's the, you know, it's a definite possibility to have that big moment letdown. You know, there was a trend, I believe it was like three or four in the later part of 2018, short notice fighters coming in and winning. We saw this again with Alex Hernandez getting his start, you know, as a over plus 3-1 dog against Benil Dariush. You see this time and time again. It's human motion to be kind of, you know, let down. And I don't say not take your opponent seriously. It's just, it's, you know, people don't realize that fighters training camps are centered around the style of opponent that they have. And so when you have to change that drastically versus a young, scrappy, up and coming, hungry fighter, it's just a motivational factor, and it cannot be overlooked. You know, when you touched on, you know, all the fighters kind of, you know, being pulled out and everything, it's crazy what we saw. There was a run, I believe it was 9 in a row and like 10 of 11, the later part of 2018, of the fighter, whoever missed weight, they were winning these fights because they were not depleting their body. They weren't cutting weight. They were just saying, I'm going to take the 20% forfeiture of the pay, and I'm going to win. And it's a topic of conversation and controversial one at that among kind of the MMA purists of, you know, what can we do to kind of stop this? Because it was on such a run, you almost had to automatically bet it if the fighter was, you know, so obviously bigger, and just, you know, they would take that 20% out, hopefully get their winning bonus to kind of even that out. And it was coming in like crazy. So it's just a different handicap. And when you look at fighters being pulled out and who that replacement is, you have to look at everything involved, whether it be, you know, how both are looking on the scale and the weigh-ins and everything. Certainly such a important component of this type of situation. So there's so many different things that go into it when you're talking about a fighter being pulled out, you know, what is the level of the person that's being replaced or replacing them, and kind of where, you know, are they coming off the couch on a short notice? Were they ready? Were they in a camp for someone else? And then last but certainly not least, how do they match up stylistically? So it's just another layer that you have to add to your handicapping when that type of thing happens.
One more question I have in general here for UFC, and then we'll dig into UFC 234. You know, one thing that UFC does do a very, very good job of is getting fighters to fight in their native countries. You know, that's something that I've always appreciated about UFC, giving these guys a chance, especially some of the guys that are towards the twilight of their career, you know, getting an opportunity to fight in front of their countrymen. How much does that factor into the handicap for you? I mean, sometimes that can be more of a distraction than a benefit, no?
It's crazy. It really is, because, you know, Brazil is probably the most notorious for this. The hometown, you know, cooking, if you will, and judges being slanted towards the hometown guy if a fight reaches decision is very real. Canada has been notorious for this in the past. Brazil is the one that will stick out into any UFC or MMA handicapper's mind for sure. It's been kind of noticed to be the worst one. It's definitely not a distraction. I think it's, you know, especially with a seasoned fighter, I think it's okay. You know, friends and family in that type of situation. When you break this down from, you know, different perspectives, you know, how many times do we see a, you know, an NFL player or an MLB player come to their hometown and hit a home run or have a great game or score a touchdown? I believe it was the Kareem Hunt game against Cleveland. You know, he had 40 of his family and friends there. I think he brought his whole high school there, and he absolutely went off. And so it's from a fighter perspective, I don't put much stock in it, but I really, really do put a lot of stock in it from a, you know, judging perspective. And you have to be very cognizant of whatever you, you know, kind of allocate that in your handicapping to that. It has to be a very clear, you know, decision against a foreign fighter if they're fighting someone from their hometown in which the judges are from. And again, not to say that anything is crooked, although that is certainly, you know, been debated and everything. It's just that everything, you know, judges are human. And for every small move, no matter how, you know, meaningless a punch being thrown by a hometown fighter is, the crowd is going to ooh and ah. And judges are going to hear that. And when you're caught up in that moment of trying to judge that fight, anything can sway you, right? And so if they're dead silent for one guy, but one guy has, you know, what has appeared to be put on such a good show for the hometown fans, it's just, you know, again, Brazil, Canada, some of the worst ones. Obviously, Australia has not really seen this yet. With Whitaker, they will. But it's just, you have to be very cognizant if a hometown fan is going, or a hometown fighter is going to decision, that those type of situations have certainly reared their ugly head before.
All right, so as we get into this UFC 234 card, I do want to mention we are recording this on Wednesday evening, so there's a very good chance that some of these lines will move. Fortunately, Christian, very accessible on Twitter, again, at Christian Pina, P-I-N-A. So if you're wondering if a price is still worth it or something like that, just reach out to him. You know, I'm sure that he'll be happy to answer that question, or, you know, if not, well, you know, go check out the preview over at bangthebook.com because that's a pretty good idea as well. Let's talk about this main event here. This is a title fight in the middleweight division. Kevin Gastelum, the plus 185 dog against Robert Whittaker in the minus 230, minus 235 range. And again, I will reiterate this. We are recording on Wednesday night, so some of these prices may have moved, especially with, you know, the more public showcase weigh-ins and all that type of thing. So what do you think about Whittaker here defending his title at home?
Yeah, and again, talked about the situation. First time for him, again, from New Zealand, makes his home now in Australia. And I mean, for Rob Whittaker, I mean, he was an absolute money train for a very long time. Obviously, the better part of 2 years. I mean, the guy must just be thrilled that he's not fighting Yoel Romero again after the wars that he's been through. But you look at a guy like Whittaker, always, I mean, for anyone that doesn't know, the middleweight division in the UFC is the most stacked of all time, and really probably, you know, top to bottom is the strongest division, and top to bottom, maybe the strongest they've ever had in any division. And Whittaker was always kind of my dark horse, you know, to kind of take over this division the way that he has. Look, 20-4 record is so solid. 9 straight victories heading into this matchup. And again, 14 of 20 come either via knockout or submission. So he's an exciting finisher. You know, doesn't have the nickname Bobby Knuckles for nothing. And it's going to be great to see kind of how Australia responds to this. Gastelum on the other side can't be overlooked. I mean, Calvin Gastelum is a guy that I largely had a hard time figuring out. Sometimes he looked great. Other times there was not a fighter who looked more like he didn't want to be in the octagon more than him. He made so many weird kind of fight IQ moments that just made you scratch your head. And all of a sudden he scores these wins over, you know, Jacare Souza, Bisping, all of that. He's just a very hard guy to figure out. And for that reason, I would certainly lean with Whittaker here, laying the price. Again, could certainly kind of drop that into an open parlay like we talked about earlier. It is a little bit of a steep price, but as the hometown guy, it's certainly stylistically, Whittaker is certainly the more consistent fighter, much like I wrote about last week with a guy like Junior Albini. And again, not to compare the two between Gastelum and Albini. Gastelum's certainly the much more accomplished fighter. There's just certain fighters that I don't know, I have a hard time kind of trusting, and Gastelum certainly falls into that just because sometimes you never know which type of guy you're going to see. Now, granted, that was at a little bit of a different weight class, obviously moving up and everything. And he is at these, has the height advantage, everything like that, the weight advantage and the home advantage all going to Whittaker. So the more consistent fighter, I think the price is very much in the range of what I would call fair. And Whittaker looking to put a show on for his hometown fans. So this one probably ends inside the distance as well. Whittaker via knockout would be my official play for that.
So here's my question. I mean, I'm not somebody who knows this market particularly well. Do you ever run into situations where maybe you'll take both guys inside the distance and just hope to, you know, in essence, sort of free roll the fight? I mean, is that even an option?
Yeah, and you know, certainly, and you can even, it all goes back to path to victory and what is the most likely path to victory for each fighter. And you can kind of play around with that by doing, you know, different type of props. You can do, you know, if it's a grappler versus a striker, you bet the striker by knockout, you bet the grappler by either decision or submission. And we saw this when we talked about Moraes and Asuncao last year. I said that the early, you know, the path to victory for Asuncao was a decision win. The path to victory for Moraes has to be an early knockout. So you knowing that if Asuncao was going to win, it was going to be by decision. You could bet Asuncao by decision, and you know, or Asuncao in the over 4.5. Conversely, on the other side, you could have bet Moraes in the under or Moraes by submission or knockout, knowing that it had to come early. So those are certainly things I play around with for sure. It's a little bit more advanced, and I don't like to, you know, kind of, I don't want to get too much into it because it's something that. You certainly can lose both bets and be, you know, kind of quote unquote reverse middled, if you will, if something crazy does happen. But it is certainly a way to kind of get around the vig and the juice and everything like that. I certainly kind of do those things both, but it can be dangerous. So you have to really know what you're doing. And, you know, of course, you can kind of hedge your bet with live betting and everything like that in between rounds if you have that available as well.
All right, so the lead-in to that championship fight between Whitaker and Gastelum is Anderson Silva and Israel Adesanya. Silva, 43 years old, a massive underdog here in this fight. Can he turn back the clock, or is this just kind of a foregone conclusion?
You never like to say anything is a foregone conclusion in this sport, especially with somebody the likes of Anderson Silva, you know, probably the greatest of all time in this division as well. And look, Adesanya is on a meteorical rise. Just, you know, looks like a newer, younger, fresher version of John Jones. It's one of those things that if you're a fan of Anderson Silva and you have been for a long time, you might not want to watch this fight. Silva hasn't fought in over 2 years. Silva just won win since 2012. And obviously he is not the same fighter that he once was. And he is, you know, a recognizable name for Israel Adesanya to have on his resume as they build this new undefeated star at 15-0. Price is certainly warranted. It's a little bit high. Again, maybe utilize an open parlay. Maybe you do something along those lines. But Adesanya is, you know, very, very likely here. And again, we saw this with Jose Aldo last week. I know obviously picked against him and thought that the younger Moicano would be able to kind of dethrone him, as he was obviously the, you know, he was the emergency fighter for a couple title fights if anyone did back out in Moicano. And so you can never count crafty veterans out, but Anderson Silva at this point is, you know, a shell of what he used to be, and it's you know, much like we saw BJ Penn and these type of things, it can get embarrassing kind of quickly in this sport. And Father Time is undefeated, so this one pretty cut and dry is Adesanya most likely inside the distance, but wouldn't be shocked by a dominant decision either.
So as we look at the rest of the main card here, and again, the main card on pay-per-view, and about the other three fights, anything stand out to you? Anything you do like in those?
Truthfully, not really from a betting perspective. I mean, Yaya and Simon, pretty closely lined fight right now. And look, Simon enters this fight with a lot really working in his favor. 2-inch reach advantage. And he's, you know, been a guy that has 4 knockouts already. Brazilian-born Yaya, extremely difficult opponent, I know, tons of experience, and he wants to get this to the ground and have his submission and jiu-jitsu game take over and try to make Simon tap. It's going to be, you know, that one is really more of a striker versus grappler that we talked about, where you could kind of do a couple different props, whether it be Simon by knockout, Yaya by submission, that type of thing. On the other side, De La Rosa versus Nadia Kassem. Kassem is an up-and-coming undefeated prospect, yet De La Rosa is a massive, massive favorite here, and De La Rosa has finished 7 of her 9 of her career wins. So she's, you know, been one of these women's fighters who are, you know, very fun to watch, much like an Amanda Nunes type of situation. Kassem is a rising star in Australia, like I said, but this is her toughest test yet, and they didn't do her any favors by matching her up with De La Rosa. So this one, again, something that could be, there should be a lot of fireworks on this card. And again, as we go about, talk about Sam Alvey and Jim Crew, just because I think that a lot of people will know who Smiling Sam Alvey is here. And Crew is going to look to has a perfect record in the UFC. And I think this one is going to be another back and forth war. And people know who Alvey is, can take punishment and keep on going. Alvey of his own, who has 19 career wins under his belt, and Crew gets a little bit of a slight edge in the betting line. Favorite in front of his family and friends. And again, this is something where I think that the, you know, betting lines obviously, you know, tend to swing based on who they're in front of in their hometown. I think this one has kind of swung a little bit too much here. And so I think that Alvey probably gets it done against the up-and-coming undefeated prospect, a little bit of a nice underdog price as well.
All right, so we move to the prelim card here, and we'll look at the four fights that are on ESPN. Again, obviously, for anyone that's either new to UFC or has missed our previous two segments, UFC now on ESPN, no longer on the Fox family of networks. So what about these four fights? Anything you do like in this set of matchups?
Truthfully, again, there's not a lot to like on here. I think a guy like Austin Arnett potentially makes some sense when you look at a guy going up against a guy in Shane Young. You know, Arnett has been something of a little bit of a crowd favorite, right? And people are tending to kind of get behind him a little bit. But when you look at the other side, Shane Young is, I just think this price is a little bit off in that effectively, it's a very evenly stylistic fight where both guys are going to want to stand with each other and go back and forth. Likely a decision. So if the 2.5 rounds prop again, where we're recording this one, isn't really out right now, I think this one likely ends up on the judges' scorecard. So we'll see where that one kind of goes. And when we bring this even down further, I just want to touch on this fight because I think it's a little bit funny. Lando Venata and Marcus Mariano. And people, I'm sure, know who Lando Venata is just because he had such effectively a rocket strapped on his back for a little while. Hasn't really worked out for the guy, and because of this he's buried down here. And I think a lot of people are maybe wondering kind of what happened to him. He went above and beyond his first, you know, his first UFC fight was a short notice debut, giving Tony Ferguson all he could handle. And I'm sure people know who Tony Ferguson is. Since then, he has just not been able to get anything going. I mean, two draws along the way, losing as big favorites. The UFC is digging the bottom of the barrel for, you know, kind of to try to build Venata up, because he is somebody much like a Uriah Hall. He has these spinning back fists, these spinning back kicks. And so they want to kind of, you know, again, I always go back to, if the UFC was WWE, Lando Venata would be a serious contender in this division. He just has not been able to figure this out. Has, you know, been notorious for seeing kind of a sports psychologist and trying to get, you know, out of his own head, basically. Has all the talent in the world, and they are just trying to find somebody that Venata can beat and they can showcase. And I think they've probably done it in this situation. But Venata is another guy, much like Gastelum, who you just cannot... you can't really feel comfortable betting him at all, but there has not been more of a tailor-made matchup for Venata than this one. All he has to do is to win this really with ease, is just wrestle for three rounds. And it's 50-50% of him either doing that or really just standing and brawling to a draw at this point with Venata. But I think it makes some sense, as scary as it is to you know, utilize that open parlay option with a guy like Venata as well, because if there was, you know, this would be kind of the last stand for me. If Venata can't win this one, very likely to be cut from the UFC. And a guy fighting for his job, no matter the current state, I think is a good proposition most of the time, especially like a guy who is as unaccomplished as Marcus Mariano as well in the prelims.
Now, as you mentioned, you know, there are really not a whole lot that you like on this card, at least from a pre-fight standpoint. So is this a card where you may look to dabble in some, in-fight wagering?
It's a little bit difficult just because... not everywhere, especially in Las Vegas, offers that, but offshores do. And that is certainly something when you talk about, you know, a Kassem versus De La Rosa, you know, these, you know, an Arnett versus Young, where with fights that you particularly see going to a decision, you know, going to a decision, just because a fighter loses round one, that, you know, a lot of people instantly have that fighter winning in their minds. And that's not the case. And if you take a piece of the dog who, you know, comes out there and win rounds one, and now you can come back for a middle opportunity, that's absolutely something. You just have to look stylistically and see kind of, you know, throw variants aside here and see which fights are most likely to make it to decision, and go from there. And because that way you can work yourself a great middle of having, you know, effectively both fighters at plus money. So you have to have a little bit of an understanding of kind of what the fight path is most likely to be, you know, fluke knockout, fluke submission aside, and then go from there. But those fights definitely make a lot of sense to do, you know, and again, you should always probably start with taking the underdog just because it's a lot easier to bet, you know, that price you can't return on once it's gone. So obviously, you know, having that in your back pocket is always something, if you're going to be live betting a lot, is something that I would start with. And then you can come back on that favorite if the price dips.
Well, again, as we mentioned here at the top of the segment, we did record this on Wednesday evening, so some of these lines may have changed a little bit. And also, I'm going to channel my inner Tony Romo and see into the future here and tell you that Christian Pina's preview for UFC 234 over at bangthebook.com is absolutely outstanding. definite must read to be sure. Christian, who's working a follow on Twitter at Christian Pina, P-I-N-A, and at Gambling Podcast. Appreciate the time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me, and we'll talk to you again before the next event.
All right, man. Talk soon. Good luck this weekend.
There you go. There's Christian Pina again from Gambling Podcast and at Christian Pina, P-I-N-A, on Twitter. No show on Monday. We'll be back on the air on Tuesday with Brian Blessing and also Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again on Tuesday.